Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler, and welcome to this morning's edition of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, where we get to honor and speak with high school students in our region who are doing independent study in one of the STEM areas. This morning, I'd like to introduce you to Elise Kanner of Byram Hills High School. Hi, Elise.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. So your project was trying to do what, Elise?
My project was trying to develop a certain type of therapy to specifically target and treat thyroid cancer.
So tell us a little bit about thyroid cancer. How common is it? How treatable normally is it? What did you learn about thyroid cancer?
So I learned that actually thyroid cancer is the most common malignancy of the endocrine system. And while not necessarily a lot of types of thyroid cancer are highly lethal, there are some, specifically anaplastic thyroid cancer, which I chose to study, which can sometimes have a mortality rate of up to almost 100%, making it therefore imperative that we can develop an effective treatment for these patients.
So it was very interesting to me personally when I read your application. I am the non-scientist on the committee that chooses. The others are scientists or retired science teachers. But I read this application, and I was immediately struck by the term anaplastic thyroid cancer because my brother-in-law passed away from this about 18 months ago. And he had had thyroid cancer. His name is Bobby Zarin. It was well known because he's married to my sister Jill Zarin. And in fact, when he passed away, it was on the cover of People magazine because my sister was one of the former Real Housewives of New York City.
Wow.
So Bobby fought a battle with thyroid cancer for 10 years, but it changed, metamorphosized into anaplastic thyroid cancer. And once it did, it was within a year that he passed. There was an experimental treatment that he did at Memorial Sloan Kettering. He got an extra 6 months, and they were good 6 months. But then when the treatment failed, for whatever reason, these treatments don't last forever, then it took him. So I know a bit about this disease from a patient's point of view. Describe for us from a scientific point of view, what is anaplastic thyroid cancer as distinct from the kind of thyroid cancer that most people get cured from?
Mm-hmm. Well, for my study, we specifically focused on a protein that's commonly overexpressed on the surface of anaplastic thyroid cancer called ICAM1. And when there's an increased expression of this protein, there's actually it actually leads to effects such as greater tumor size, greater lymph node metastasis, meaning it can spread around the body quicker and further, as well as a more aggressive tumor as compared to many other types of thyroid cancers.
So let's go back a minute, because my understanding, Elise, is that 90% of people who get thyroid cancer will be able to be cured based on the iodine treatment therapy. Is that true?
I'm actually not familiar with the iodine treatment therapy, but I do know that thyroid cancer is a very curable form of thyroid cancer. This specific type, however, is just one of the tougher ones to treat.
Because, and this is what I was told, Elise, that anaplastic means that the cells no longer know what they're supposed to do in the body. That something has been triggered in the body where if you're a stomach cell, you don't know you're a stomach cell anymore. If you're a lung cell, you don't know you're a lung cell. And it's an explosion mm-hmm. of cancer throughout the body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've diverged so much from a normal cell. And they're also are able to, cancer cells specifically are able to develop these mechanisms to evade the immune system, which is why my study was so important, because we were actually able to harness the immune system to kill these cancer cells.
So where did you do your science research, Elise?
I did my research after an extensive mentor search at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City, and I had great mentors and great people in the lab that I was fortunate to work with.
And what was the lab working on? Like, in other words, what was the study in place when you joined the lab?
Well, they were working on a variety of therapies. I had been working previously or studying previously a form of therapy called CAR T-cell therapy, where they would re-engineer T-cells to specifically target and treat and kill these thyroid tumor cells. But then when I got there, their study or their focus in the lab was kind of shifting towards BiTE immunotherapy, which is what I studied.
And what is BiTE stand for? What is it? What does it mean?
BiTE stands for bispecific T-cell engager. This means that we form an antibody construct that displays an affinity towards both a protein expressed on the surface of T cells.
Too scientific. We're going to go back.
Got it.
All right. Let's do in layman's terms what you just tried to say.
Okay.
Let's make it really simple.
So a bispecific T cell engager acts as a magnet, essentially, in that it displays an attraction towards both T cells, which normally go to fight off diseases or infections in our body, as well as displaying an attraction towards the cancer cells, so they can recruit these T cells to the tumor site in order to kill off the tumor cells.
Is it a BiTE cell I'm talking about?
It's an antibody.
A BiTE antibody. Do these occur naturally in our body?
No, we have to actually make them.
Okay, so you're making an antibody in a petri dish, in a cell someplace. Mm-hmm. Where does it come from? Is it a mixture of chemicals, animals? Where does it come from?
It comes from the DNA that codes for all of these components that give it the attraction towards specific cells.
I'm not understanding. Whose DNA?
Whose DNA?
Yeah. In other words, you say that the BiTE comes from DNA. Is it human being DNA? Is it the patient's own DNA? I'm a little confused.
Mm-hmm. So ideally, it would be the patient's DNA. And we essentially combine it in different ways to give this DNA the correct code to give it the attraction towards both cells.
So you're shooting something into someone's body that they don't already have.
Right.
That's a manipulation of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get it to do a process that will then harness the body's own ability to fight the cancer?
Yes. So how it works is after we have the DNA in the correct order with all of the components that we want, it actually is inserted into other types of cells in order to become the fully fledged protein.
Okay.
So once it actually becomes the protein, that's when it is injected into a mouse model or hopefully one day clinical trials in humans, where it will then bind to both the T cells and the tumor cells, so that way the T cells can specifically kill these tumor cells.
Okay, so it's trying to be a connector.
Yes,
to help
exactly.
Our T cells work.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because right now the way the anaplastic cancer is, the T cells have nothing to do with it. They don't fight it. They don't recognize it. They don't do anything. Right.
Because the cancer cells have mechanisms to disguise themselves to evade T cells from coming and killing the cancer cells.
And in general, this field of immunotherapy and cancer is taken on a tremendous amount of money and research and energy of scientists right now, right?
Yes. It's definitely a growing field.
We're chatting with Elise Kanner of Byram Hills High School, and Elise is our winner this week of the Acorda Scientific Excellence Award. You can find out more about the award on Acorda.com, ACORDA.com. And Elise is teaching us a little bit about this emerging world of immunotherapy as a way to fight cancer. So what is it that you, Elise, did in the laboratory or as part of your research project? What did you do?
So first, I had to actually independently select and read literature on the topic to educate myself before going into the lab. And once I got into the lab, I worked with my professional mentors in developing the study, figuring out the methodology we were going to use, and actually executing the methods, collecting results, and analyzing some data. And then after I left the lab, I was actually able to analyze and draw conclusions independently, which I, of course, later checked over with my mentors. But it was really rewarding to work with my mentors inside the lab, but then know I also was able to do some independent work with this study outside.
Did you have anything to do with the mice?
Because I was a minor in the lab, I actually wasn't allowed to work with mice. So when I tested this therapy, I tested it with cell lines in petri dishes.
In petri dishes. Mm-hmm. And then were other people in the lab testing it in mice?
Later. So if
Later.
This shows success, which it did,
okay.
With
so
the petri
where it,
dishes,
so this
move
was
on.
A preliminary, this was the first piece of the study.
Yes.
Okay. And what did you learn?
I learned that in research, nothing is guaranteed, and there's no single track that it can take. So you're going to have to make adjustments and adapt. Even just before going into the lab, I had actually had a mentor and then was told that they wouldn't have space for me in the lab that summer.
That's disappointing.
It was very disappointing. So I had to restart and re-educate myself. And I learned a lot about myself through the process, that I could be more resilient, that I was able to teach myself things that postdocs were teaching themselves and learning, and how research and the nature of research can change very, very quickly.
And as you were doing this particular study, and you're saying that the research had to change as you went, so just describe, if you can remember, an example or two of when you thought it was going to go one way, but how you determined it couldn't go that way and had to go another way.
Mm-hmm. I had actually originally intended to go into the lab wanting to test whatever therapy I helped to develop on mice, but because of restrictions, I was a minor, I actually wasn't able to do that, so we kind of had to readapt and think, okay, well, what can I do even with my restrictions? So I was able to deal with the proteins, with the DNA, indirectly with the cell lines, so I just kind of had to adjust what I had thought I was going to do to what I was actually able
okay.
to do.
So in other words, and were you personally disappointed then? But you moved?
Slightly, but I was able to see them work with the mice.
Yeah.
And I hope to do that one day in college or later.
Did you have any ethical qualms about experimenting on mice?
You know, a little bit. But I think when you think of the greater good that it can bring humans and the community in general, especially hearing your story about how thyroid cancer has personally affected you, I kind of think that it has a greater overall purpose.
There's a foundation that only exists for research for anaplastic thyroid cancer. Did you
really?
Know that? Yeah.
No, I didn't.
My sister discovered it in the course of, you know, trying to help Bobby. And we got to meet the people because the founder of this foundation, his wife passed away from anaplastic thyroid cancer because it's such a rare... It's such a rare cancer because 90% of people who get thyroid cancer are able to be treated and cured. It doesn't come back. But Bobby was one of the 10% that did not respond to the iodine treatment. And so when it came back, initially it came back in the lung, and then it came back in the brain. But then it became anaplastic. And when we were told that word, which we then quickly looked up, that was when the diagnosis became pretty hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty horrible diagnosis.
And that's why hearing stories like that makes me feel like my work is actually making a difference in the lives of the people around me, which is why I did this program in the first place and wanted to pursue this research.
We're going to chat a little bit more with Elise Kanner. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Accorded Scientific Excellence Award. I'm your host, Lisa Wexler. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009. Or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
Having a child with a learning disability is not easy. Winston Prep knows that. Until now, when your son or daughter was ready for high school, you've had few choices. Either send him away to boarding school, where he'll get that special attention he needs, or you take a shot at the local public high school, where you'll spend so much time trying to get them to provide enough support. But now there's another option. The Winston Prep School, located right in Norwalk. Winston Prep School is the only day high school for kids with learning disabilities. Actually, they started grade 6 going through grade 12. Every child benefits from the FOCUS program, a daily one-on-one instructional session. Winston's highly trained teachers instruct kids with both language-based and nonverbal learning disabilities. If you're a parent who wakes up every morning and says, "What can I do today to make my kid's life a little better, to increase her chances of success?" then give Winston Prep a call at 203-229-0465. That's 203-229-0465. Or sign up for one of their upcoming open houses. Winston Prep may be the answer you've been looking for.
Hi, Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler. Join us every weekday on this station between 4 and 6 o'clock p.m. Hey, if you're thinking about it, we're talking about it. We're listening to what's happening in our community, and we want to hear from you as well. We talk politics, science, and the arts. We consult with experts, and we want your opinion. So join us every weekday. I'm Lisa Wexler right here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. And welcome back. I'm Lisa Wexler, and you're listening to the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award. This award, we're finishing our sixth season, I can't believe it, is an award that is sponsored by Accorda Therapeutics, a biotechnology company based in Ardsley, New York. And what we attempt to do is we try and find some of our marvelous brainiac kids that are doing independent STEM research in Fairfield and Westchester and Putnam counties. So if you are one of these kids or know one of these kids, please go on Accorda.com, A-C-O-R-D-A.com. The difference, the beauty of this award, the unique aspect, is that the award itself is an opportunity for young people to discuss their research and in doing so teach us about what is happening in the cutting edge of scientific research. This morning, our winner is Elise Kanner of Armonk of Byram Hills High School. And Byram Hills High School, Elise, has given us an unusual amount of winners this year. Mm-hmm. You've got quite a class.
Yes.
You really do.
We actually had our science research symposium last night. It was our 30th annual symposium, which is really incredible that our program has been thriving all these years. And the theme was shattering expectations because of this year's senior class and all that we've done and all that we've accomplished.
I mean, I think I don't know that we've kept stats on this, but anecdotally, I think we have more winners from Byram than any other school by a long shot this year, which is not usually the case. There's something in the water.
Definitely. Well, the teachers, we have a very strong senior class this year, and we're all very motivated and ambitious and passionate about our research, and the teachers definitely motivated us and encouraged us to pursue.
Let's give a shout-out to your teacher.
Huge shout-out to Dr. Matthew, Ms. Greenwald, Ms. Salomon, Ms. Kay, Mr. Gulick, all the science research teachers that have helped me and guided me throughout these 3 years.
How many kids are in science research at Byram Hills High School?
There are 27 seniors, I think around 20 juniors, and quite a lot of sophomores in the program.
So it's still very healthy.
Yes.
It's a and, you know, you're program. In Armonk, so you're in the land of IBM and, you know, Watson himself, right? Do you come from a scientific background, Elise?
Actually, yes. My dad's mom was a bio teacher who loved science, and if she were here, would be so proud to see all I've done with it.
Yeah, I bet. Are you going to stick with science in college?
Yes, I'm actually pursuing engineering next year because it's kind of like doing science research again for another 4 years.
Fantastic.
It's thinking what about the problems that we have and applying kind of new out-of-the-box ways or solutions to them. And actually, at the end of the 4 years, I'll be developing a project with the group that we show off actually at a symposium.
You already know this already.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. Do you know where you're going to school in the fall?
Yes, I'm going to Columbia University.
Oh, congratulations. Your parents are going to be so happy you're not far.
Right.
That is fantastic. That is really beautiful. Congratulations. So you're going to stick with science. That's marvelous. Mm-hmm. You could probably keep going at this lab that you worked at for this study for anaplastic thyroid. I mean,
definitely,
you know,
I may go back and see them this summer. Mm-hmm.
So let's just go back a little bit, because I want you to explain to us, if you can, why immunotherapy and cancer, why is that such a novel approach, and why is it such a promising approach to cancer?
It's such a novel approach because it doesn't require the use of another anti-cancer drug that's there. You're just using what you already have to kill the cancer cells. And it's novel and important in that, like how I mentioned before, these cancer cells are able to evade the immune system. So by finding a way to specifically bind to them and bring them to the tumor cells, you actually don't need anything else but what you already have inside your body to execute this therapy.
Right. And that's why it could be so promising. But from what I know, Elise, right now the immunotherapy is a little bit in its early stages, mm-hmm. and the patients that have to undergo immunotherapy in cancer, they say that it's really very hard on them. And I wonder why that is. If we're supposed to be using the body's own forces, mm-hmm. why are the patients, why is it so terrible for them? Do you know? I mean, this is far afield of your project. I don't expect you to know, but...
I think it just must be hard on them because they have such compromised immune systems. So any alteration to what they're normally used to, I'm sure, is hard on their bodies and hard to handle at those stages.
And in terms of what you did, in terms of going back to your project for a minute, who made the initial guess that this particular agent, this manipulation of DNA, could be a magnet for the immune system and for the cancer cells to reach each mm-hmm. other?
I'm not sure, actually, the founder of the BiTE antibody. It's been around for, I think, it's in its very early stages, but there are actually two FDA-approved BiTE antibodies out there.
Okay.
One of them specifically treating non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
All right.
But I think the idea just kind of, I guess, came from all these other therapies that seemed to be working and other immunotherapies that had come before it, where if we were able to specifically target or specifically develop something that could bind to the cancer cells, what's stopping us from creating something that could also specifically bind to our T cells?
Okay. All right. So in other words, the BiTE had already been sort of discovered to be able to bind to a cancer cell, and that's why somebody guessed that it could bind to a T cell as well?
Well, other therapies had been able to specifically bind to cancer cells, such as nanoparticles or CAR T cells.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how did you know conclusively that this experiment worked?
I tested my BiTE antibody in two ways when I incubated it with cells. So when I incubated it with thyroid tumor cells and with T cells, it showed specific binding.
What does that mean, to show specific binding? What does that mean?
It means that the BiTE was able to specifically latch on to these cells that are key to actually treating
literally under the microscope, you could see it migrate to and combine with? Is that what you mean?
I actually didn't get to look at it, but that's what it would do.
Okay.
And whereas when I tested it with control cells, which means they didn't express the proteins on either the T cells or the tumor cells, there was little to no binding, showing that when this, or if this were to be tested eventually in mouse models, that it would only bind to the cells involved in the treatment of the cancer.
But I guess I'm confused, Elise. If you're not looking under a microscope mm-hmm. to see them bind, to see them literally merge, then how is it, by what scientific method did you determine that they did bind?
I used a method called a FACS analysis, which
What's
is just
that?
A fancy way of saying that when the correct cells bound to each other, there would be fluorescence emitted.
Oh, it makes another process.
Mm-hmm. It would emit fluorescence so we could tell the specific binding versus when it bound to cells that it wasn't supposed to, there would not be as large of an emission.
So it turns a color.
Mm-hmm.
And do you see that in a specific kind of microscope?
I saw it on a graph. A graph would display it.
Very cool. That is very, very cool. Okay. So it was a successful experiment.
Yes. And then the specifically successful part of it was then after testing for binding, I actually tested to see whether it could recruit the T cells to specifically kill tumor cells, which it did when I incubated it with these cells. And I found that with HeLa cells, which are a cancerous type of cell that in this case overexpressed our tumor protein, it actually was able to kill or recruit T cells to kill all 100% of the tumor cells in just 50 hours.
So that must have been very exciting.
That was so exciting. I was so happy when I saw that. It
That's
was amazing.
Unbelievable. And your whole lab must have been so excited about
mm-hmm,
that.
Definitely.
So when you're in a lab and they feel like it's a eureka moment, I guess you had said earlier that the next step is not just in a petri dish, but in mouse models.
Right.
You did this research last summer?
Yes, this past summer.
So do you know? Have you kept up with the lab? Do you know if it's progressed to the next stage?
I believe it is. I think first, before mouse models, we needed to reproduce it with a larger sample size because
okay.
we were a little, we had some time restraints this summer. But I think these results were definitely promising and that it will move to further stages soon.
It's very, very exciting. What was the name of your mentor again?
Who was Well, the head of the lab was Dr. Moonsoo Jin, but my mentors specifically were Ms. Jacqueline McCloskey, Dr. Yanping Yang, and Dr. Yogi Vedivas. And they all helped
me so much. It's amazing that you
much.
Remember all those names.
Yeah.
And you said that you had lost another mentor. How were you able to find these?
You know, I knew from a very young age that I really had wanted to be in this program. I'd seen the success that it brought and was very passionate about science from such a young age.
Meaning program, meaning the science research program.
At my high school, yes. And I knew that people had dropped the program before because they lost mentors, but I couldn't let that happen to me. I was very passionate about what I was studying, and I don't think I ever could have forgiven myself for not trying my hardest to do whatever I could to keep going.
That's pretty great. We're chatting with Elise Kanner of Byram Hills High School, which has some stellar group of budding scientists or already scientists this year, because we are in the waning days, the last part of our season, and I'm just seeing so many winners from Byram Hills High School. It's really impressive, Elise. It really is. One of the things we always ask is an ethics question. And this year, last year we asked about cheating. This year we said assume cheating happens. And pretty much to the person, every student I asked on the air, is there cheating in your school, would say yes. Is that still the case?
Yeah. Definitely. I don't think it's as pronounced as someone looking over at the other person's test, but I think it happens in a variety of ways.
It does, huh? Mm-hmm. How would you stop cheating or slow it down?
Well, when people have asked me, if I take a test second period and someone doesn't take the test till fifth period and they ask me about it, I'll just kind of pretend like I don't remember, so that way
they
can't ask me about it. Right, I'm not complicit.
They're not complicit on the receiving end of the cheating. I mean, being on the other end of the cheating, right? Do teachers let you bring your cell phone into classrooms?
They do. However, sometimes they have you put it in a pouch at the front of the room, or for me, they're just, you know, they just prefer for you to have it off so it's not distracting.
Because to me, that seems like such an easy way to cheat. If you have your cell phone, because it's a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's no good. And, you know, as a budding scientist, I'm sure you recognize that if anybody cheats, it screws up everybody else's research down the pike, because you have to be able to rely on the findings and the honesty and integrity of everybody else along the way.
Definitely. I mean, when researchers have been proved to be wrong, then not just their study is wrong, but everything else based upon that study is now invalid.
Exactly. It's a whole building block scenario.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. We're chatting with Elise Kanner, and she is this week's winner of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award for research that moves further along the newly promising realm of immunotherapy, our own immune system being used to harness the fight against cancer. And Elise, you're going on to Columbia in the fall. Yes. We wish you well.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations, and thank you for joining us today.
Of course. I had a great time, and I'm so glad I was able to share my work with the larger audience.
Me too. Me too. And if you missed any part of this interview or you'd like to rehear it, you can do so on lisawexler.com or on soundcloud.com. And we'll be back next week. Thank you for joining us today.